Peace be with you. Friends, we have the great privilege today of continuing our consideration of the Sermon on the Mount, this great programmatic speech that Jesus gave that really sums up his teaching. Last week we looked at the eight Beatitudes, that's sort of a prologue to the speech. But right after the Beatitudes, we find the short gospel for today. Jesus says, "You," referring to his disciples, his followers, "you are the salt of the earth." Now, I know it's become a bit of a watchword, a kind of adage, meaning somebody who's simple and basic and without guile. You know, they're just salt of the earth, those people. Now, I'm not sure how much that little saying, as we use it, has to do with what Jesus meant. I think his statement has a lot of spiritual power, and there are many spiritual overtones to it. I don't think being down to earth is really one of them. Think first of this. Salt, even today, more than anything else, is what makes food taste good. Whenever you take a sip of soup, or you bite into a burger, or you savor some French fries, and you say, "Man, that's good," what you're probably referencing above all is the salt content. Which explains, of course, why so many of us have high blood pressure. But if you don't believe me on this score, try a real salt-free diet sometime and see how much you like it. Salt is what makes food taste good. It makes it savory. So what's Jesus telling his followers? Which is to say, us. Remember last week I said, picture yourself sitting in that circle of disciples at the feet of Jesus. So we're there and we hear these words. He's telling them and us that we are meant to make the world spicy and tasty. Now, I know it's a paradox, for we tend to associate spiciness with Vegas or Monte Carlo or people living in the fast lane. But you know what? That lifestyle and those people, at the end of the day, are ultimately very dull indeed. And I'll stay with that. I'll take that to the bank. There's something boring, repetitive, addicting about a life that's just given over to sensual pleasure and to egotism. Do you doubt me? Watch any of those programs about people who've lived the Hollywood lifestyle and they've made it to old age and they think back on it. Tell me how happy they seem to you. I think a lot of them seem rather dull and discontented. Those who make life tasty and savory and enjoyable are precisely those who channel the divine life, who become conduits of grace. Again, think about it. It's not the Vegas people that make life spicy. It's the saints who make life savory, rich, tasty, spicy. The saints pepper life with divine grace, and they make it fun. They make it joyful. That's true in my experience. The people I most like to spend time with are those who channel into the world something of God's presence. They're the spice. They're the salt. Another dimension of salt, especially in the ancient world, is its preservative quality. We take for granted, of course, in the presence of refrigeration, which allows us to preserve milk and butter and meat for long periods. But in the ancient world, milk and butter and meat had to be consumed right away. Or meat could be preserved only through the introduction of salt, which was a commodity hard to come by in the ancient world. Otherwise, elements within the environment would quickly cause it to rot. In other words, salt kept good things good. You don't need me to tell you that we live in a world gone wrong. A world marked by violence, hatred, corruption, self-absorption, sexual sin, the exploitation of children, etc., etc. You know, watch the 10 o'clock news. But amidst all this, there is much that is good. There's generosity, there's kindness, there's the love even of enemies. There's nonviolence. But the good is continually threatened by the bad. is continually threatened by evil elements within the moral and spiritual environment. The point is, the good meat will quickly rot unless there is salt around. Jesus is telling his followers and us, you are the salt of the earth. That means you must insinuate yourself into every nook and cranny of the world in order to act as preserving agents for what is good and just and true and beautiful. Do you think of your workday this way? Do you think of your family life this way? Without your example, without your good word, without your love, good things might not last. They might not survive. Whatever is good and right and true and beautiful in your place of work, maybe it needs you around to preserve it. Whatever is of God in your family, it needs you, your love, your devotion, your generosity, your kindness to preserve it. Perhaps your goodness will keep a good kid from going bad. Think about that. Here's a kid. It's got good in him, it's got bad in him. What will prevent the good from going bad? Maybe it's you. Your example, your kind word. Perhaps your commitment to righteousness will keep a colleague from making a bad decision. You know, I was very struck by, just recently, the funeral of Sergeant Shriver, you know, who was a vice presidential candidate back in the 70s. He was the first director of the Peace Corps. Someone that really embodied, I think, the best of that 1960s idealism. But he was also a man of great personal goodness. Everyone testifies to that. And what came through in the eulogies and speeches at his funeral was just that, that Sergeant Shriver's goodness made a lot of people around him better. Whatever was good in them was preserved. It was kept alive by his decency. Do you ever wonder whether your humor, your good cheer, might prevent a decent person from falling into a depression or just giving up? Do you see? You're acting as a sort of moral and spiritual preservative. That's what he means here by saying you're salt. You're the salt of the earth. Spicy, yeah, and you preserve what's worth preserving. Now, flip it around. There's a related sense as well. That's why this image of salt is so powerful. Salt was a preservative of meat and so on, but in ancient times, it was also a destructive element. When the Romans conquered Carthage, they killed the people, knocked down the walls, and then they salted the earth, assuring that nothing would ever grow there again. That was their way of utterly destroying Carthage. We will salt the earth. Salt can preserve, but salt can also compromise and destroy. Well, Jesus says, you, my followers, you are the salt of the earth. Well, see, that's interesting, isn't it? Salt that's in the earth. That's something very destructive. Well, right. We are meant to be agents of destruction as well. In the measure, listen, that we block, we get in the way of, we criticize, we undermine things that are inimical to God's good purpose. The gates of hell will not prevail against the church. That means the church is on the offensive. You know what that image implies? Not that hell's coming after us. We're coming after hell. The gates of it will not prevail against us. We have an aggressive purpose in the world, which is to go after hatred, violence, stupidity, superstition, self-absorption. Did you hear just last week the incredibly chilling statistic that in New York City, 41% of all pregnancies end in abortion. You heard me right. 41%. I mean, coming up on half of pregnancies in New York City end in abortion. I mean, I don't know. I don't care where you are on the spectrum of that question. I don't know anyone that can be happy with that statistic. Well, here's my question. Who's getting in the way of that? Who's blocking it? Who's going after it? Who's destroying it? Operating as salt for the earth? Streets in my hometown, Chicago, have become a killing field. Absolutely unbearable, unacceptable levels of violence. In the streets of this great modern city of Chicago. Where are the Christians who are getting in the way of that? Remember how Martin Luther King actively gummed up the works of a dysfunctional society? That's what he did. He got in the way of it. He got in the way, got in the face of segregation. Who's getting in the face of the violence in our cities? See, that's being salt for the earth. Just a word now about light. Because Jesus says, you're salt of the earth, you're also light for the world. He says, you, my followers, are a city set on a mountain. In a word, what? You're all about vision, direction, illumination. It's no accident that all the saints and angels are depicted with halos around their heads. The idea is that these are the beings who show us the deepest truth of things and hence show us the way. That's what light does. It shows you the way. When you're walking in darkness and a light goes out, now I know where I'm going. That's the role of Christians in the world. Think of a candle in the window on a cold, dark winter's night, as the song says. That's what a follower of Christ is supposed to be. The world is very often a cold, dark winter's night. Who's shedding light? Who's giving hope? Who shows the way when we're a bit lost? The followers of Jesus. That's why, when things are looking pretty bleak, Mother Teresa, the Little Flower, Francis of Assisi, Dorothy Day, Rose Hawthorne, St. Paul, St. Augustine, I can go on, show us where to go and how to walk. Well, every single baptized person listening to me right now is meant to be light in a similar way. Oh, no, that's not my job. I'm just trying to live my life. No, but that's it. That's it. You do become light. And so, make life spicy. There's a first task. Make it fun, enjoyable, rich, savory. Preserve what's good in the world. You do it by your kindness, your goodness. Undermine what needs undermining. Salt. And then show people the way. Give people hope by the very beauty and decency of your life. In other words, be salt and be light. And God bless you.